Hello, I'm Edwina Farley. Welcome to another in our special summer series of A Country Breakfast here on Radio National. Today we continue our series on the Soldier Settler Scheme, set up at the end of World War One. This morning we're off to Mildura and the small fruit blocks set up along the Murray River, and part two of our special report into wine and the price you pay at the bottle shop. Does it really reflect the quality of the wine in the bottle? We also bring you some of our favourite stories from our team of reporters based in regional Australia. This week we're crocodile spotting along the Catherine River in the Top End, we're pulling out weeds on Egg Island, and discovering the sport of yard dog trialling. A group of ladies is brushing up on their basic car care skills in Broken Hill, and you get to meet Holly, a 9-year-old mini fox terrier who fancies herself in the sheepyard. She and her owner, David Smith, were barking mad when the local council wanted to register her as a house dog.
Here, Holly, get him, Holly, get him.
Holly was gutted when I told her that they thought that she was only a house dog. So as she slipped into a state of depression, I indicated to her that we'll appeal it.
Holly, Holly.
And they did. Holly's story a bit later. But first up today, let's shine that spotlight and go croc spotting in the Northern Territory.
An average night we'll see probably 20 to 25. But if it's, you know, all the conditions are right and, you know, we're going pretty well, we can get up to 35 that we'll see.
The Catherine River in the Northern Territory is a great place to go swimming and canoeing. There's just one small problem you need to deal with. Crocodiles. G'day, I'm Dan Fitzgerald. Freshwater crocodiles aren't a problem, but you certainly don't want to come across a saltwater croc while you're paddling down the river. That's why park rangers at Nipmuluk National Park have been cruising for crocs over the past month. They're using a spotlight to count and log the location of crocodiles before they open the popular gorge areas for recreational use. Tonight, I've joined Rangers Andrew McPhee and Sarah Franks on one of their last night patrols.
Basically, yeah, we're not trying to see every croc every night. It's just gathering data over the four-week period and, yeah, seeing, you know, how many's around, where they are. And the big thing is making sure there's no saltwater crocodiles in the system. We know there's lots of freshies, so they're fine.
Yeah. So those crocodiles that you have been seeing, they've all been freshwater crocodiles?
Correct, yes. Yeah. Most definitely. The idea is we've got Sarah up the front who's going to be spotting, and she'll go through the motions with the light. She's got signals that she'll give me with the light telling me that there's something here or there, and come up and go, yep, we've got a freshwater croc, 1.5 metres, great, move on to the next one, you know, so that's essentially what we're doing.
All right. Well, it's getting pretty dark now. There's a few stars coming out. Let's get to it.
Righto, no worries.
Sarah Franks, ranger at Nipmuluk National Park.
Now, you're on the light tonight. What do you have to do to spot a croc?
Basically, you need to get yourself a really bright light first. And then basically I'm just sweeping along the water's edge and along the midstream of the water as we're travelling along. And I'm looking for the bright reflection of the eye shine of the crocodiles. And then, yeah, once we spot one, we'll cruise the boat over nice and close, and then we'll hopefully be able to ID it.
It doesn't take too long before Sarah Frank spots her first set of crocodile eyes in the glow of the spotlight, about 50 metres away on the riverbank.
So that's, I can tell from the eyes there that he's actually quite a decent size, so probably at least 1.5 metres.
By how big the eyes are?
How big the eyes are, how far apart they're spaced, that sort of stuff, yeah.
So you're going to keep him in the spotlight now as we approach?
Yeah. So what I do generally, you try and keep, you know, as quiet as you can not to disturb the animals. And so I'll signal with the light and Andrew will know, and then I just hold it in the light so Andrew knows where to drive the boat to. Pull up there, Andrew. So you can see the nice, long, narrow snout. That's what's the really big giveaway to know, so we know that it's
there?
A freshie.
So now that we've spotted that one, what are you recording here on the data sheet?
So basically we GPS where we find him. I'm recording whether it's a freshwater, a saltwater, or sometimes we only get eyes only. So if we we sort of see the eyes from a distance, and then when we get up, we sort of lose whatever it is. We'll record it still as an eyes only. That way we can go back and check if we see like a spot that's eyes only quite often. It might be a good indicator that it's something a bit more than just a freshie. So we'll put more intensive action into sort of looking for that one particular eyes only.
All right, well, we'll see if we can spot some more. How hard is it to differentiate the eyes of a croc shining in the light to one of a cane toad or another animal?
Different animals tend to have different coloured eyes, so it can be easy, but we still get, even the best of us still get tricked. The cane toad eye shine is very similar to the croc's.
How much movement do they do during the night?
Well, the night's when they're the most active, so they're actively hunting for food. So they can actually move quite a bit, but they generally stay within their territory, especially the males, because if they don't, the other males tend to get a bit cross.
Now, you just spotted another one there, but we've lost sight of him. Do they shy away and duck underneath the water often?
No, they're generally pretty good. You can usually identify them quite clearly. They'll sit long enough for you to at least tell what they are. But yeah, again, it's just that thing. Sometimes they're a bit skittish for whatever reason.
Andrew, croc spotting's, it's a fairly serious business, but it's quite pleasant out here on the water at night. Do you enjoy coming out and looking for crocs?
I do, yeah. It's one of the many good things that we do as rangers. We get to come up in the gorge here, as you've seen, basically having the whole gorge system to ourselves, which is pretty cool. So yeah, it's good. It gets us out looking at the park, at, you know, especially the river system here at a totally different time of day. So it's, you know, we're seeing birds and animals, and you know, we just saw a whole heap of frogs out on rocks, and you know, you just don't see that in the daytime. So for rangers, we love seeing all the other things out here other than just spotting for crocs. But that, you know, we'll take that. It's a pretty good part of the job. So yeah.
Okay, Sarah, we've just pulled up at the boat ramp now. How many crocs did you spot tonight?
We had 23 in total. It's probably slightly below average.
And there's just one more survey to do before the finish of this round. What will happen then when you've finished, completed that?
Once we've followed all the processes and ticked all our boxes and we're satisfied that we're confident that there's not a salty in the system, we'll then pass that up on the line and hopefully get approval to open the river for recreational purposes.
Then people will be able to go swimming here in the Katherine River, somewhat more at ease.
I guess, yes. That's probably a good way of putting it. We never say it's 100% safe because we can never be absolutely sure. But yeah, I'm fairly confident at this stage there's probably nothing in here.
Come on, Angus. Come on. Stay there. Stay there. Stay there. Come by. I got a sheepdog about 14 years ago. It happened to be a French sheepdog called a Briard. And then realised he was effectively unemployed in the back garden. So I started ringing farmers and asking if they'd teach me how to use work sheep. And I got a lot of laughs, as you can imagine, and get yourself a real dog, you know.
Meet Sabina Muller-Glissman. She lives in suburban Canberra, but loves nothing more than being in a paddock with a mob of sheep teaching a collie Angus working dog skills. And he's got a lot to learn. The two of them are competing in a novice yard dog trial later this week.
Morning, Angus. And then a friend found Robert and Jenny Cox, who run working dog clinics, and they were prepared to take someone from the city and their city dog. And I've never really looked back. I've just, through them, discovered a passion for moving sheep with my dogs.
Hello, I'm Michael Kavanagh. Sabina doesn't own her own property. She relies on the generosity of people like retired wool classer and dog breeder Charlie Cover to get real hands-on experience. Charlie's property is at Yass, just to the west of Canberra, in southern New South Wales. We're standing in this lovely setting at Yass, approximately 45 merino wethers, yarded by Angus. The sheep watching Angus, Angus watching the sheep. But in suburban Canberra, how can you work Angus during the week?
Well, you don't work him. A couple of things. First of all, one thing you can do in the city is keep your dog's mind stable. And that's just about having very clear black and white rules. For example, he's not allowed to go through any entrance or gateway ahead of me, because on a property you don't want the dog rushing through a gate and causing all havoc in the paddock. Secondly, it's about just letting him be, and that requires, you know, a space where they can just shut down and turn off, like a kennel or so forth. So that all helps them with their mind and just being settled and so forth. You have to keep them a little bit fit, that's for sure, but at the end of the day, nothing beats having sheep to work with, and that's why I go to a lot of effort to find places that will allow me to do a bit of work and build my skill level up. And people are very generous if you've got a willingness to learn, and I have bizarrely developed this passion at ripe old age of 48 as I am now. You know, I think if you're willing to learn, people are prepared to teach you. So whilst what you do in the city is very limited, if you've got a bit of passion and drive, I think it's like any sport, isn't it? You will go to where you get the experience you need.
And Sabina's come to the right place to improve her skills. Charlie Cover has years of experience in breeding and training working collie dogs.
I just like to look at it as a good sheep dog rather than to be too specific. Each dog will have characteristics that will need modifying. It's an instinct, and you're modifying an instinct to make it a better sheepdog. I'm a person that pays a little bit of lip service to my own work at times, and if I've got to explain it to someone else and point out to them that they're doing wrong, then you've got to be a little bit careful about what you do yourself, and I find that that's very good for me.
How much do you actually have to teach the handlers, the person that owns the dog, as opposed to people that are working with them all day, every day on a property? You have people coming out from the suburbs. Do you have to change them as well?
Definitely. And look, even the people that are on properties that want to improve their dogs, it's the person, the handler, that is the main, often the main fault, quite honestly. They don't give the dog a chance to express his natural inherited abilities, and things often can't happen fast enough for the handler. The best way I can explain it, if I see a dog improve dramatically to what he was last week, then I know straight away that the handler has improved, otherwise the dog doesn't. You modify the your expectations. I try to be honest with people. I don't tell people that they can win a sheepdog trial. It's a pretty difficult thing. Anyone that's in sheepdog trialing just for the money or the ribbons even, then it's most likely a pretty hard row. It's very, very competitive. It's very, very time consuming. And you've got three species on the ground at the one time. You've got a human, a dog and sheep. And to balance these up and have things go exactly right, put it this way, if you leave your luck at home, don't bother turning up.
This weekend, he's in the novice section. What do you reckon his chances are?
Oh, his chances are. I will be very, very happy if I get around. What did you say, Charlie? Red hot favourite. That's a friend talking. That's a good friend talking. Look, no chance to win, Michael, but it's going to be fantastic and a lot of fun, and hopefully I'll just get around with my dignity relatively intact and the sheep safe and nicely put back in the yard where they belong. Come on, Angus. Come on. Stay there. Stay there. Stay there.
Someone asked before about title nuts. Look, if they're too tight to undo, well, then you've got to call someone to help you, because...
Hi, I'm Heather. I've come here tonight to learn how to look after my car, because my husband won't let me drive to Mildura without knowing how to change a tyre. So it's really informative for me. It's been good.
If they're too tight for you to undo, don't do yourself an injury and try and persevere. Get someone to give you a hand.
Hi, I'm Gigi, and I am just participated in the Women for Drive workshop, and I found it really interesting.
Just wind the wheel nuts on.
Do you check the oil before heading off on a long road trip? What about topping up the water for the windscreen wipers? And can you change a tyre? Hello, I'm Cherie von Hirschner, and like the other women around me tonight, I'm now much better informed about basic car maintenance than I was just a couple of hours ago. And that's pretty important when you live in the remote far west of New South Wales, often hundreds of kilometres from a friendly mechanic. There's about 25 of us here tonight in Arthur Clifton's garage in Broken Hill, ranging in age from 16 to 75, all keen to learn what's under the bonnet.
Well, I'm just trying to teach them the basics of keeping a car on the road and not having to abandon it if there's any need to, sort of thing, really. Yeah, trying to teach them, the right way of going about things rather than panicking and leaving their car and sort of putting themselves in danger of walking away from it, yeah.
So what are some of the questions that have been asked tonight?
Mainly about where the oil goes and how do you put the oil in, and brake fluid, water for the radiator and also water for your window washers. They get a bit worried about how their tyres are wearing or how much tread's left on them. And we supply them with a tread depth gauge, a little cardboard tread depth gauge, and that seems to allay their fears because they know they've got a fair way to go, or they haven't got so far to go on their tyres yet.
So far, what have you been learning?
About wheel alignments. And I didn't know that they put little balances in the wheels. I thought they actually put it on a machine and shook it up to make it even. But so each wheel was like in the right position, balancing, yeah. They put these little weights in the rims. Yeah, that was really interesting to me.
And what else are you hoping to learn tonight?
How to change the tyre so I can go to Mildura shopping.
We even went under a car, which I'd never done in my life before. It was fascinating. Everyone should have a look at what a car looks like from underneath that, yeah.
And do you, when you go driving, do you head out bush much in your car?
I don't do so much bush driving, but I do long distance driving a lot. And as a woman, you do feel sometimes the stretches are so long. If anything happened, you know, would I be able to cope? And so tonight was really useful in that it gave me more confidence.
Hi, I'm Abby. I came here tonight to learn a bit on how to look after my car.
Before you came tonight, did you have any idea on how to change a tyre?
No, I didn't know how to change my tyre before I came here.
Hi, I'm Belle. I've came here tonight to learn more about my car and the servicing side of things. It's all been pretty interesting so far, and yeah, it's good help.
How long have you been driving for?
5 years. Yeah, no, I have learned a few things tonight that I didn't actually know about, which was good.
Like what?
Just a lot more about the tyres, what they're made out of, that they're actually tubeless. I thought they had tubes in them. Your tyre pressure, actually. I learned about what your tyre pressure should be, which is good because I'm always ringing up my brother-in-law asking him what my tyre pressure should be.
The tyre can be put on the left side of the car, the right side of the car, front or rear.
Hi, I'm Geraldine. I came along tonight to pick up a few hints on things to get me out of difficulties when I'm driving, because I drive along away sometimes on my own. Yes, I've learned tonight how to get myself out of mischief if I do have any problems on the road.
What stood out for you were a couple of things that were really important?
I think weather conditions. They gave us a few hints on weather conditions and what to do when we're driving, for our tyre care. Safety, a few safety tips that I wouldn't have thought of had I even been changing a tyre.
Like what?
Well, the chocks, using like under the alternate tyres. We could use rocks in like an outback situation on the road. Yeah, and just basically being aware of keeping our car in good order, checking a few simple things every couple of weeks. Yes, it's good.
Geraldine, one of the women participating in that special car maintenance course in Broken Hill, Cherie von Horschner, our reporter there, getting her hands dirty, changing those tyres. Still to come on this special summer series of A Country Breakfast, Holly's fight to be recognised as a working dog, and we're off to a tiny island in Tasmania's Tamar Valley to tackle a weed problem.
Yeah. That's right.
Oh yes, we're heading out in a tinny. Life jackets on. We're not really going too fast. It's a fair day for fishing, but that's not the aim, because we'll be back on land in a tick. On a wee island in northern Tasmania's biggest estuary, Egg Island. It's just under a hectare all up, and too small for farming, and neglected, it's become home for a patchwork of weeds. Hello, I'm Rose Grant, and I'm in the mid-reaches of the Tamar. Dennis Gasly from Tamar NRM's organised this trip and the tools and the paperwork. And it's easy to see why. There are large bushes of bone seed with hectic yellow flowers that, well, even from this distance you can't miss.
I trust you enjoyed your journey.
The mission today is to seek and destroy, and no ticket of leave till it's done.
Okay.
you'd like to make your way to the pointy part of the boat.
Yes, welcome. Hello, Mavis, how are you?
Very well, how are you?
Hello, Mike.
How are you? Yes, every weed known to man, eh?
Oh, not quite. There's lots of blackberry.
That's good.
Yeah.
All right, let's go for a walk. We were under the impression that there was an eradication effort about 10 years ago, but that one obviously got missed. We didn't know what we were expecting, and we all came with handsaws and loppers, and when we found that, I drove back home and got my chainsaw. So we've come more prepared this year, we know what to expect.
We've just walked from one end to the other, it hasn't taken 5 minutes.
Yeah, roughly. I think it's about 120 metres long and about 60 metres wide, and its closest point to shore it wouldn't be more than 150 metres off Hillwood.
Then that's not enough of a barrier for all of these. Wow. Mostly agricultural weeds, aren't they?
Yeah, lots of grass. Some of it's actually reasonably productive pasture if it was in a paddock. Lots of cockfoot, lots of three-cornered garlic, lots of blackberries. And the reason that we're here is the bone seed. Bone seed is a Zone A weed in the region, which means that it's targeted for eradication.
And that's the aim?
That's the aim. So the site's managed by Parks and Wildlife, and we have a couple of people from Parks here today. They've donated a boat to get us here and a couple of staff for the day. And since the effort that we've made with the volunteers here, they are starting to talk about possibly doing a more comprehensive rectification or restoration of the site, which is great.
Can you introduce me to the team? AJ down there in the boat?
Yeah, AJ. Anthony Timmerman is our ranger who drives our boat. So he's been kind enough to come down for the day to get us across here. And we've got Jane from the Trevellyn site. We've also got Mandy Smith from the Department of Primary Industries and Michael Black from NRM North.
So how much do you reckon we can get done today?
So this is the second visit, and we had a larger crew here last year, and we did about two-thirds of the island. I'm hoping that we'll be able to get the last third done. It's probably not quite at a stage where we can say we've completely covered the island, but certainly have reduced most of the seeding plants on the island at the end of the day. Yeah.
I'd better then go and grab some loppers because I haven't got my chainsaw ticket.
No, that's all right. I've got my chainsaw ticket, and Jane and Anthony both have their ticket as well. So we've got plenty of people that can use a chainsaw.
Well, there's plenty of work to go around.
I suppose probably the other thing I should mention is that community over at Hillwood have been making a real effort to eradicate bone seed, and because the weed is distributed by birds, it has been a source of reseeding those sites that they've been working hard at. So that's the main reason that we're trying to make the extra effort to get out here once a year.
Fantastic. Well, today's the day. Now's the time. Let's go to it, Dennis.
Great.
That one's done. Oh, and that one's dead.
There's a few in there.
Nearly.
Yay! The last bone seed bush.
Exactly.
I'm Mandy Smith from Department of Primary Industries.
Not your average day?
No, not my average day, but it's been a lovely day. I've been very productive. You can obviously see where we've been and what kind of impact we've made.
Countless bits of bone seed.
Definitely, definitely.
I've just seen another one. I thought we were into the last one. There I was thinking I was making a radio program. That's it, isn't it?
That's it.
How about that? You got the honour of taking out the last one.
How do you feel?
I think it's a dubious honour.
I think it's a great honour. It's a good job. Well done.
Well done. Well done, us.
Now it's just going to be a matter of keeping an eye on it and maintaining it and hopefully keeping it down and off the island. That'd be great.
Yeah, I guess there'll be a few seedlings come back in a year's time and there'll be little plants 6 to 12 inches high.
There will be, but they'll be a lot easier to get out than trying to tackle them as we've done. Combine that with the blackberries and it can make it quite a bad environment. It can make it a harsh environment for anything that's on the island, so... Yeah.
It's in its own way a beautiful environment, though. What sort of things, apart from bone seed and blackberries, have you seen today?
Oh, we've got some native cherries around, which are really exciting to see because they're really good to just have them on your little islands, your native areas and that sort of thing. And, well, of course, we've all been excited about seeing that wallaby. I don't know where he's gone. He's probably he's probably taken off or hiding somewhere. He's probably taken refuge. But, there's still some nice
nice trees on here, so it's all good. So once we can clear it, it'd be nice to clear it and just maybe repopulate with more natives. That would be nice.
Just a little bit of encouragement for what's wanting to happen.
Yeah, and sort of, you know, edge out a few of the weedy species. So that'd be really nice. That's what I'd like to see happen. It's like with anybody with their own backyard weeds, it's just getting into a management cycle where, you know, you tackle your weeds. You may have to do a big job first up, but there's always maintenance to follow up with. It's like anyone owning a home, there's always maintenance to follow up with. So, yeah, it's just getting that kind of mindset and getting that, you know, regular maintenance, I think, more than anything.
And getting here.
Yes, well, getting here too. That's the other little problem we have, but I think we've done all right today.
I didn't
have to swim, that's a good thing.
I think I can hear the boat bumping there, and it must be getting tired. We should pack up. Thank you.
I think so. That'd be great. Thanks very much for your help.
Holly, Holly.
Holly here wouldn't be too much bigger than a well-fed guinea pig. She's a 9-year-old mini fox terrier living on a sheep and cattle farm at Kalangadoo in the southeast corner of South Australia. She might be dwarfed by the kelpies running around the sheepyards here, but when it comes to farm work, her owner David Smith doesn't pay too much attention to breed or stature.
Here, Holly, get him, Holly, get him. Come back, here.
I'm a firm believer that any person or animal that sets foot here needs to put in to earn their keep, you know. So Holly's been with us 9.5 years now, and certainly when we're doing yard work, every single time when the stock agents come out and we're drafting lambs, sheep, whatever, weighing lambs, Holly be in doing her little bit.
Hello, I'm Danny Grindley, and Holly certainly does her bit around the farm. She's even got the paperwork to prove it. David Smith has successfully appealed a decision by the local council she be registered as a house dog, arguing Holly is a valuable part of his working dog team.
Good girl, Holly.
So I know that a lot of little dogs like to kind of copy the bigger working dogs, but you've actually trained Holly.
Yeah. I like to train all the dogs myself. I never buy a trained dog. So they all start off as pups and start with the ritual of learning to sit and then come and then go back. So that's the three basics. It's her bark that's the key thing that's of great help. Some dogs are natural barkers, others aren't. One of my dogs there behind you, Rosie, she hardly barks at all, so if I'm working these two together, it is great to have that little yap at the right time.
So we're in your yards here, David, and you've to make up for her size, you just pop her on top of the railings here.
Yeah, that's right. We've had a couple of the little dogs that love getting up there because they realise that they can't get harmed up there, and they just run along and they'll do their barking bit and stir them up.
Now, this was all because you wanted Holly to earn her keep, but that became more important. It came into question.
Yeah, that's right. Her credentials were questioned by the council. I got a letter stating that any little house dogs, so to speak, would not be registered as farm working dogs. The registration for farm working dogs is less than your town house dogs, but it was more a point of question. Holly was gutted when I told her that they thought that she was only a house dog. So as she slipped into a state of depression, I indicated to her that we'll appeal it.
Right, and that appeal involved actually having to get her to prove her status as a working dog.
Yeah, that's right. I rang up the council and I said, hey, my little Holly's a working dog. And this is a very serious subject, I might add, Danny.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I will take it seriously, David.
So I indicated that I would appeal it. So we arranged a time for the two council gentlemen to come out. And we put her through her paces, and she performed just typical, you know, just helping out and yarding the stock up. Holly, this will be your moment of recognising your contribution to the livestock industry. They could see immediately that she was more than just a house dog, and she would sit and speak up and work the sheep. So they were obviously quite rightly impressed and gave her the status of working dog.
Right. Did that change what she was fed that night or where she was sleeping or anything like that?
No. No. I didn't want to have her spoilt in any way. No, that would be no good at all.
Working dog, exactly.
That's it.
Good girl.
Kalangadoo farmer David Smith and his pocket rocket working dog, Holly, who it appears does manage to sneak inside at night to curl up on the couch. Danny Grindley brought us that story. Next up in this special summer series of A Country Breakfast here on Radio National, the Soldier Settlement Scheme. This week, Mildura and the fruit-growing blocks are along the Murray River.